Barbara Rossing, and I just want to say a word about forums at Holden. Most of you have been to some before, but we'll just be strictly 1 hour and try to have this be an atmosphere of sharing in a spirit of not necessarily consensus or unanimity or anything like that, but just to hear each other. And we've tried to get quite different viewpoints represented, both among those of us who are going to say just a few words at the beginning and hopefully within the group also. So we just kind of ask that you not attack people, but rather venture your viewpoint as part of the lively conversation. We really want to hear from a lot of different people on this, but we certainly won't end up agreeing, nor is that the goal. And then at 9:30, we will go next door for a party to say goodbye and send off our singles emphasis guests. Dan is going to moderate the first part of the forum until his voice totally gives out, and then I will take over after that.
And I need to say at the beginning, too, that the people sitting on this panel are here not as a panel of experts, but by people. People who courageously agreed to share a few thoughts out of their own personal experience. And one of the things we did, they may not directly address these, but in the five of us talking before the session, brainstormed a few words up there that come up around the issue of singleness and Christian sexuality that we just put up there. Celibacy, intimacy, sexuality, chastity, singleness, and issues of trust. And they put a few questions there that we thought would be helpful also for people to think about. Questions like, how do I integrate my faith and sexuality? Where do I look for guidance to do this integration? And where do I find people I trust enough to share this part of myself? Who do I talk to about an issue such as this? And so we're going to just go through very briefly the folks on the panel here to share some of their own thoughts and then open up to the wider group. And Barb is going to start us off.
Excuse me, are we taping?
Yeah, it's being taped.
The forum is being taped, just so you're aware of that.
Every forum is. I mean, it's not a big deal here, and you don't have to say your name. Well, I just thought I'd start by laying out, I think a little bit theologically anyway, some of the struggle, at least for me as an ordained pastor. Earlier this year, I got a copy of the guidelines that are given to all candidates for ordination in the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, but I think this is pretty typical of most denominations. And there, a candidate has to abide by these guidelines in order to continue in the candidacy process that says the appropriate setting for sexual intercourse and other expressions of sexual intimacy is marriage. A pattern of behavior that substitutes promiscuous behavior or the sexual abuse of another for that of a relationship of commitment and care is inappropriate and is reason for removal from candidacy. This has been in effect for a couple of years now in the ELCA and is in the process of being replaced by another document which is even more specific called Guidelines for All Ordained Ministers, which specifically says that all single pastors are expected to live a life of chaste celibacy. So that's the church's official position. It's a struggle, I think, to know what to do with that, or to know, I mean, especially when it's 65 married men bishops telling you what is expected of you. But that's the church's position. On the other hand, I do, when I read the New Testament, there's certainly among the household folds, they're called the groups of sort of all the things you're not supposed to do. Among them is fornication, which is widely interpreted anyway as sexual intimacy outside of marriage. We could talk about that. And I think in Roman society at the time in which the New Testament was written, people were very sexually active and it wasn't confined to marriage. And so the call for celibacy and for chastity was part of the church's radical response to that culture, which practiced sexual intercourse in fairly widespread manner. For example, St. Augustine had several concubines before he became a Christian, and then he was among the many people who saw becoming a Christian as giving up that way of life and turning towards another. And so I really struggle with, on the one hand, the radical challenge of the gospel, which includes my sexual conduct as well as everything else about who I am as a Christian, versus expectations that I'm not sure are reasonable.
Susan?
Do I have to say my name? Okay.
Be somebody else.
I was just going to share a little bit of my life story. I have to say I'm really nervous too. I've been married. I was married for 7 years, and I've been divorced about 5 years. And about halfway through my marriage, we ran into a lot of problems, just a different variety of problems that we just couldn't work through together. And I think, as is typical in that sort of happening, our sex life became a problem too. It wasn't the first problem, but it sort of was a symptom of other problems. And actually, it became rather non-existent. It seemed like the last 2 or 3 years, we just didn't have a sex life. We couldn't talk about it. We couldn't really talk about any of our problems. It just was, communication in our marriage was really, really hard. And and I guess at the time, I didn't think it was odd that here was a married couple in their early 30s not having sex. Now I think it's odd. We didn't have a very good sex life at all, and I think that was really strange. Then after my marriage, a couple, 3 years later, I had another relationship, met a man, fell in love. And this was a very physical relationship, very physical, very, very nice sexual relationship. And in some ways, I think that's, when I look back on it, I think that's all it was. There wasn't too much more going on in that relationship, except a nice physical relationship. I think there was a lot more going on, but sometimes I can summarize it in that way. And I think it may have been the fulfillment of the physical needs that kept us together for probably longer than the relationship was worth. There were a lot of my spiritual needs that weren't being met. And coming to Holden basically ended this relationship. I didn't end it right away, but it has now ended. And at this point, I guess I figure my next sexual relationship will be with the man I marry next. I'm not sure. I've had sex before love. I've had love after sex, and I think I'd rather have love next and then sex. I'm not sure how to do that. It's not really the way I've done it in my life. Sometimes it's kind of strange to think of it like that, but I do want to try to do it differently next time. And now I find myself struggling too with trying to redefine my sexuality. And I keep coming up against the term intimacy, and I don't know how to even define that. And it seems to involve sex and sometimes doesn't. It's, I think, a much broader term, and I think sexuality is a much broader term than sex, than the word or the act of sex. I know I have a lot of needs for intimacy that aren't being fulfilled right now, and I don't know how to ask for them. I don't even know what to ask for. It's just something that I've been struggling for with now here at Holden. And I guess I just pray that this community, and within this community, I can find some guidance for that.
Yeah. I'm going to start by reading a poem, actually. Everyone brought books on being sexual and celibate and things, and I brought Leaves of Grass by Walt Whitman. I saw in Louisiana a live oak growing. I saw in Louisiana a live oak growing. All alone it stood, and the moss hung down from the branches. Without any companion, it grew there, uttering joyous leaves of dark green. And its look, rude, unbending, lusty, made me think of myself. But I wondered how it could utter joyous leaves standing alone there without its friend near, for I knew I could not. And I broke off a twig with a certain number of leaves upon it, and twined around it a little moss, and brought it away, and I have placed it in sight in my room. It is not needed to remind me as of my own dear friends, for I believe lately I think of little else than them. Yet it remains to me a curious token. It makes me think of manly love. For all that, and though the live oak glistens there in Louisiana, solitary in a wide, flat space, uttering joyous leaves all its life without a friend or a lover near, I know very well I could not. I wrote down a few things that I thought of. the culture that I was brought up in and the culture that we live in now, I think, really puts the majority of the emphasis on the actual act of sex. It's been referred to by many different names. And I see in the whole, the part of sexuality, the act itself is important, but it's a very minor part when played in relationship to the emotional and the spiritual aspects of sexuality and the relational aspects of sexuality. I'll say that I do not believe that sex is the ultimate act of love, as it's made out to be sometimes. My reasoning behind that is because just one of the few Bible passages I know, there is no greater love than this, that one lays down one's life for a friend. And that I think is the greatest of love. And sex is, and sexuality is very, very important in relationships and in love, but it's not the ultimate act, I think. Sex and sexuality is a very powerful thing, I think. It has a power that can calm people, it has a power that can revitalize and energize people. And for me to limit that to one person is like saying I can only love one person. And yet I love all my friends to start with, and it goes on from there. So I find it really hard to confine in a marriage sexuality. As I said before, I believe emotions and spirituality be a very important part of the sex act and of sexuality in general. But I think it's also important to realize that one can be very sexual and very sensual without even doing the act itself. So I'm kind of in a bind right now of where I stand. I know that I can't, as Walt Whitman pointed out, I can't live without other people in that way, in that relational way, in the sexual way. But I also know that the act itself is not the most important part of love or of sexuality. That's where I stand.
Jenny?
I have been divorced now about 10.5 years after being married for 21 years. And somewhat like Susan, the sex within the marriage was probably felt, I guess I could say that I felt somewhat used. And even when the sex by itself, which by itself I agree with Mark, is not where it's at, even when that improved, I was left feeling emotionally very empty and really didn't know how to communicate that. And the whole picture was complicated with alcoholism. I guess I want to go back a little bit. I think part of the reason I'm here is there was a woman, and she's given me permission to say this, named Karen, who left today. And three of us, Claire and Karen and myself, were on a walk on Sunday. Karen shared that she takes a very strong stand now for celibacy. She's been divorced, I believe, 3 years. And feels that is the way God wants her to live her life, and that is the right way to go. My experience as a single has been different than that, and what struck me was in this setting how we could share that and in a very caring way, and neither one of us would put the other one down, or I know I didn't feel attacked at all. What struck me as having been brought up with quite a traditional Lutheran, after I was divorced and got into relationships that did include sex, I was struck with how much more whole and healthy those relationships seemed to be. And I didn't have a pastor that I felt I could go to, but I can remember talking to a woman friend at my church at the time and telling her that the sex outside of marriage felt much more healthy, as I said, and whole than the sex within marriage, and that that seemed to amaze me, and I didn't know how to explain that, having been brought up the way that I was, and having believed that sex before or outside of marriage was wrong. I guess regrets that I would have now are that with the act of sex, when there is intimacy, and there needs to be emotional and spiritual intimacy, there is such a bonding that takes place for me that when that relationship ends, if it's a short-term one, I am left with part of that person, and probably they're left with part of me. And then I think some of that gets carried into the next relationship. I know that for me, I want to continue to be friends with that person, and most of the time that has happened. It hasn't been that often. But I can never say again that person is just someone, just that it's something unique has happened, and that person forever after is special in some way to me. And that really complicates the picture. I had a 7-year relationship that was very good. We were in the same church, and when we decided, we lived together for 3 years, something I had said I would never do. And when we decided to phase that relationship into friendship, we did it over a period of months, and it worked out quite well. And we put a letter in our church newsletter telling the congregation that we had decided that since we were not going to make a long-term commitment as a couple, we felt it that we should go apart and remain very close friends, which we have done. We've been, I think the relationship was 7 years, and for 3 years now, we've been very close friends. I think I'm growing through these experiences, and the most recent relationship was entered into very, very slowly and deliberately, and that person agreed that we both questioned whether sex should be part of a relationship where we did not necessarily intend to be married. Neither one of us really felt ready to be married. And whether sex was the thing that we wanted to make part of that. We did this very, very, very slowly, built a lot of intimacy and trust and communication, and eventually sex did become part of it. And that too has seemed like a very whole and healthy kind of sexuality within a bond of intimacy. I have a lot more questions at this point, even at this point in my life, than I have any answers.
Well, I want to say as we open it up now, just a couple things first. One, I really respect and appreciate that level of intimacy and vulnerability that you've been able to share in front of a group. I know the setting's not easy for that, and so really appreciate the depth that you're sharing. And would encourage all of us as we respond or share our own perspectives to root it out of our own experience. Speak in I sentences. Take your own assumptions as your starting point, and see if we can create a space where we can hear each other, the concerns, the questions we might have. But as we open it up now to the larger group, perhaps some of the questions that either emerge from their sharing or some of the questions we put on the board of how do we, as people of faith, we're also sexual beings, how do we integrate those in the decisions we make about the choices we make? So I'll open it up either to further sharing or questions people might have.
Looks like we're going to break in a small group.
I certainly admire
Jenny.
Your courage for the letter you put in your church newsletter. No way would anything like that, I don't think, ever go into my church newsletter. And I can only guess at the reaction of the congregation if there was something like that there. I think you're very fortunate to be with such an understanding congregation.
It was not the same congregation that I was in when I was first divorced, mm-hmm. where I didn't even feel that I could go to the pastor.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I sometimes feel like I lead a lot of different lives. I mean, the church people see one part, my friends see a part, my people at work see another part, my family sees another mm-hmm. part, you know, and all these different people in one.
Yep, so the issue of integrity comes in, I think, doesn't it?
Did you have a
I was brought up a Lutheran, and I'm not that familiar with what's in the rules and regulations there. I have belonged to a very liberal group of Lutherans. But I feel that sexuality is a gift from God, and that it is our sexuality. They differ from person to person, but that the only thing the church can really expect then is that we use it with responsibility. And I much prefer to see something like that written than what they have written, and because this way they're trying to control it. And so then you're directed from the outside. And sex doesn't just turn on when you get married, as everyone knows. And so I object to their way of putting it. I shall have to withhold my tithe.
No! Complex, the Madonna complex, till they got married, and didn't really let themselves enjoy it. You know? And there were a lot of women that I was around in college that, you know, would have big guilt trips and loved somebody, and you went all through that. But now, you know, I've been married, and sex was, it was okay for it to be a good thing. But now marriage is over, and you like sex, and I find myself in a real, I was okay as long as I've gone out on dates with men that were duds. The sexuality issue. And you know, you sign that breath of relief that you get in bed by yourself and you're a single person and there's not something expected of you when you don't feel that intimacy. But I had the rare occasion of being with someone that is a fantastic person, and it was 2 weeks before I came to Holden, and it's like, what do you do with that, you know? And I've left to Jimmy, and you know, how do you put your hormones in check when you've been free to act on those feelings of passion, I guess. And at times I think married women have not felt intimate with their mates and acted on sexual passion. And I think especially for people who are divorced, who've lived a certain type of live intimacy for a long time, you learn to act out things, whether you really, like I said, feel intimate or comfortable with them, and go for the physical pleasure of something, which is, you know, which I think, you know, it's hard to balance out what's intimacy and what's sex then. And so I escaped to Holden.
Right.
He was on call and I came to Holden.
Looking for duds.
That's where I find myself, is in this real confused state. Because I think a lot of people really don't know what it's like to have sex with intimacy. It's like what you were saying. Especially if you've been in a failing marriage. Or if you once had that, it's no more by the end, obviously. So I don't know where I find myself. And, you know, I just don't know how to keep my hormones in check, and then how do you know when it's right? And there's no rules anymore. There's no morality rules for me anymore.
that's a troublesome thing, especially when you're with someone who you, you know, it's more than attraction, it's a...
Well, I don't know if we necessarily have to have an overall rule, or that we necessarily have to look to the church to give us that rule. One of the things Barbara didn't mention when she mentioned these new guidelines was the reason they were adopted was over the ordination of a gay man and two lesbian women in San Francisco in January. Up until that time, they didn't have these rules, and it was only as a result of the initial approval for ordination of some gay men back a couple of years ago that they even came up with these rules, and then it was kind of adopted in a panic because they felt they had to do something to address the issue before this issue that they perceived would perhaps tear the church apart got out of control, out of their control. So I don't know if necessarily looking to the church to give us the rules is what we need to expect or what we should look for. I mean, help from that direction, I guess, is fine, is what I'm saying, but does the church have to have the first, last, and only word as to what is or isn't acceptable as far as how we act or don't act on our sexuality?
And the point, point in addition to that is, though, that the church is saying a lot of different things. The church, apparently, that Jenny goes to is acceptant of that kind of openness about that relationship. The national church, what the bishops say is one thing, but each of our congregations have a lot of different opinions about it. The church that I belong to in Berkeley has been active in that issue of homosexuality and ordination, and we've submitted a letter, and we hope it will go to our synod convention, and we hope that it will go from there to the national convention, to urge the church to put more time and energy into this issue, because obviously these rules are so inadequate. And there is so much, I think that the various opinions we've begun to voice here are probably representative opinions across the country. I mean, there's no consensus among church members about, I think, in this day and age, about what is to be expected in the area of sexuality.
That raises the question that of where do we turn for guidance? I mean, we've talked about churches here. Barb brought up the New Testament. People have talked about friendships. Where do people turn for guidance in terms of how to integrate or understand our questions of our sexuality and make responsible decisions?
For myself, I know it didn't work in the past. So I sort of base my decisions on what I've done before, sort of personally through. I know that getting involved with people when I was married was not a good idea, so I'm not going to do that again. I know that getting involved with somebody sexually before I was really in love with them wouldn't work real well, so that's not a good idea. I know that blindly following rules isn't a good idea. So it's all sort of, but doesn't work. It's a half an answer.
It seems to me that the way I've read scripture is that Jesus deals with sexuality very little in the New Testament, but He deals a lot with the dignity of people. And it seems that sexuality has a lot more to do with dealing with a person's dignity than it does with rules and regulations on what's permissible sexuality. So I think you can, personally speaking, I use scripture as a guideline. And if you focus in on Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm. As opposed to Paul the Apostle, right?
Yeah. Jesus doesn't deal with issues of sexuality, almost never. I mean, there are instances where he will condemn adultery. Well, how would you define adultery? I would like to know if people would define adultery as something, having a sexual relationship with somebody who's married, or if you have premarital sex, would you call that adultery? I wouldn't. Also, just to add one more thing, another dimension that Augustine brings up a lot is, I mean, sexual intercourse will generate children if precautions aren't taken. And even if they are taken, it isn't 100% efficient. So are you ready, if a child is conceived, to take care of the child? I think that's another consideration too. I mean, it is something between two people, but there's also the possibility of creating a child. Amen.
Dan, in response to your question, as some of you will recall, a year ago we had a similar forum, and I talked much too much then, and I probably, if I open my mouth, will talk too much tonight. But three times during the past year, on three different evenings, I sat down just off the top of my head and jotted down on one a list why no sex for singles, and then arguments against the tradition and for single sex. And the third time, I wrote one on a sexual ethic for singles. Let me read these six short points. One, a Christian ethic is not designed simply to control. Two, a Christian ethic is more a matter of relationship and motive than of a single act. It is more a matter of spirit than of law. Three, any ethic for singles must be by singles and not imposed on singles by those who are married. Four, a Christian ethic arrives at a sense of oughtness in terms of caring, compassion, and reverence for human personality, not in terms of do's and don'ts. Five, whether sexual intercourse is to be experienced by singles ought to be a matter of whether it is life-denying or life-giving. Does it thwart or fulfill the person or the community? And six, whether the sex act is legitimate is not a matter of whether there has been a legal marriage, but what is the relationship of the persons involved, and does their physical sexual activity enhance or impair their relationship with God, with each other, and with other people? And let me rule out the church as an institution. I see the church as something other than an institution. The church has institutions. And the institution. I'm always bothered when some institution which calls itself church, whether it's your denomination or mine or some other, or whether some body of clergy and laity, usually balanced, gets together and says, this is the law of God. But I'm always wondering about Jesus' words, you neglected the commands of God that you might follow the traditions of men. I'm wondering about oversimplification, one of our big sins. I'm wondering about these simple answers that shut off all discussion. Once any denomination passes a rule like that one, it then tells every clergyman, you are out of line to discuss the subject. You cannot discuss the subject. And if you're a single clergyman, you're in jeopardy. You may be thrown out. if you even discuss the subject, if you question it, because it indicates you obviously don't agree.
I mean, Lord, why don't you say just a couple, you know, like briefly, just about your own life, because last year that really affected me when you shared your own story of how, well, you were a pastor and you got kicked out, right, for being poor?
No.
Okay, sorry.
I should have stopped when the mouse came.
Okay, just say it briefly. Briefly,
because
there
are other hands up.
Well, I don't even want to remember what all I said last year. And so I'm not real sure what you're talking about. I've never been kicked out of anything. I lost one church for speaking too loud on Vietnam. But,
oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
No, I said a lot of things, but I don't want to take the time of all
okay.
that.
Excuse me.
Point your question if you really want me to respond. I'm not clear.
No, let's just go on now.
Okay.
There's hands here.
Yeah, I came to this forum. I was talking to Margie on the way in, saying, well, it seems like a pretty closed issue for me, but I'm interested in hearing what other people are concerned and interested in. And I found myself really responding with extreme interest. And I find that I do want to share something of my own experience because it is different. And yet, before I say what my experience is, I also want to say what's happened to me as a result partly of this forum and the atmosphere at Holden this week, and partly as a result of just the journey that I'm on, which is that I feel that I can hear with interest, compassion, concern, and love the varied approaches. Now that's tremendous growth for me. I came to the place that I am with my sexuality in conjunction with my conversion to Christ. I had been married some 9 years. It was a poor marriage, and I was an adulteress during the time of that marriage. I was not a Christian. I was, for all intents and purposes, a prostitute. I didn't accept money, but sex was not the issue. I mean, I appreciate what you guys are saying about that. It was a real need within me for connectedness with another human being, and all I knew at that time was that I could attract a man. And it seemed fairly easy to do that, and so I did it, and there was a lot of satisfaction in being able to do that. There were control issues there. And so I entered into a lot of very unsatisfactory relationships during and after my marriage. None of them were satisfactory. None of them were satisfying. None of them were very long. I can say right now, I know absolutely nothing about any kind of committed, serious, one-on-one, equal relationship with a man. I simply don't have that experience. But there came a time when, and my life was not happy. I was living this ethic that I sort of made up for myself, which was just do what feels good. And so I just kind of went my way. And there came a time when I was confronted by Christ. And through a series of circumstances, which I won't go into now, I came to the point at which it was clear to me that I needed to say yes to Christ, and that my life would thereafter be significantly, radically different. And at that point, it was also very clear to me, and I see that this is a very personal thing, this is not something that's normative for anybody, but it was very clear to me that what he was saying to me was, give up this way of life that includes promiscuity, sexual promiscuity, that you are to be willing to give up as you accept me into your life. And I believe that by an act of His grace, that became something I wanted to assent to. And I did. And then there was Christ. He was in my life. My life began to change in dramatic ways. Serious lifestyle changes. And then subsequent to that time, a year or so later, I entered into another relationship with a man. And it became a sexual relationship. It was a fairly lighthearted, non-profound kind of relationship where the physical element really was the best part of it. And for a while it seemed okay. But then there came a point at which I could not tolerate the tension within me between what I had said to God and what I believed He wanted of me and the way this relationship was. And with considerable amount of shoving and pushing it within me and backing and forth, and I finally managed to extricate myself from that relationship. And that was some 17, 18 years ago. And I have been celibate ever since. And I find peace in that most of the time. But I also find that there's longing in me for closeness. I see some women who seem so able to talk freely and become close to men, and I go, gee, I'd like to be able to do that. I don't know how to do that. And one of the issues that's being raised for me now as you're talking is, have I heard the Lord aright? Am I shutting myself down? Have I shut myself down? Have I run away from a dangerous and scary place that is simpler to escape and simply go away like the Essenes rather than to confront? And that's now a question I don't have any answer for.
Okay. Dan wants to talk, so I'll field questions.
We agreed to shift partway through. I'm going to croak out a few things. No, I'm really glad you brought up the question of celibacy, because as a gay man, the celibacy question has been such an important one in trying to discern questions about sexuality. And I want to start with what I say with, I believe deeply and affirm the gift of celibacy the calling to celibacy is a spiritual calling, a gift. But I also deeply affirm that that needs to come out through a process of discernment and a real encounter with Christ and God, and a process of discernment of whether celibacy or not is the right option for people. Where the dilemma comes in for many gay and lesbian people is that there's never a question of discernment. As Howard pointed out, Barbara's pointed out, it becomes a question of coercion, where it's simply imposed. Without any question of helping the person to discern or not whether celibacy is an appropriate response to one's sexuality. And it's been a very difficult catch-22 for many, many gay and lesbian people in the church. We're not allowed to marry. We're not allowed to have our relationships affirmed, or even blessed in the church. And we're told that there can be no sexual element to that. And yet we understand ourselves as sexual beings, and following much of church teaching, understand sexuality to be a gift of God. And so it sets up a real schizophrenia for many of us. I think it's one that many people, gay and non-gay, experience. I think it just, for gay people, the contradiction comes so much sooner, because we don't have the option of entering into institutionalized marriage to experience ourselves as sexual beings. And what I'm finding very, very hopeful and helpful is that many people now are realizing that that many relationships inside of marriage are terribly abusive, and that simply sanctioning sexuality within inside of marriage does not address the other issues of intimacy, of respect, of integrity, and therefore we need to be going beyond simple rules and conventions of either totally inside a marriage or outside a marriage, to addressing the other factors of relationship that go within that. And I think, frankly, that's one of the places the church has a lot to learn from gay and lesbian people, because we've been forced to do that for years now, in trying to understand how to deal responsibly with our sexuality.
Something about the breaking it down so much, you know, like this has been, like Singles Week, a lot of talk about singles is separate from being married, and you know, gay and lesbian as opposed, it seems like there's a lot of breaking down. I think a lot of the problems are all the same, you know, from all sides of it. I've lived a few different lives, and like back in the 60s, things were rather free and wild, and then I was married for a while, and then I was, did the street thing for a while, and then I got married again, and then I did the attic, you know, crazy sex and all the wildness thing. And like when I think about this, it's really, you know, I keep thinking of, you know, how it was then, how it was then, how it was then. Where I got to, and kind of like I've heard some people say that, how to integrate faith and sexuality. Where I'm at now is it came to be like I can coerce or talk or manipulate or do something my way in sex. That's not what I want. And I can't do that to get love. You know, I can't make love happen. I can, you know, I can use fancy words. I remember how to do that stuff. It just doesn't feel that good no more. And that's kind of what I'm doing that day. In, you know, where the answers come from, and I think Terry was saying, you know, like some of that stuff don't feel too good anymore. And that's kind of what I'm trying to go by. You know, not just the word rule, you know, that's almost scary, because if somebody tells me I can't, I'm probably going to go out and try to do it tonight, you know. I've never done anything with rules. You know, I try not to apply them to me, because that causes me trouble. I'd rather look inside and see how it's feeling. And it's kind of funny, because there's some friends of mine, you know, we've been, seems like we're kind of doing this parallel deal. So that's where I get my help from, you know, is people that are on the same, seems like the same path at the same time. It's tough, because my patterns, the way I think, you know, like, is that instant gratification, you know, and that going out, my hormones start to flow and I want to do something with it. And a lot of times my hormones overrule my thought process, and then it hurts, it doesn't feel right again, you know. And you come to that time, you know, when I've heard eternity described as the time between orgasm and when she gets up to leave. And that's, I've experienced that, so I don't like that feeling no more, you know. And that's when there's nothing there other than just, you know, somebody for a while, that's the feeling I get. I don't like that no more. And then when I go out and get hormoned again, and that happens. See, it's a lot easier now clean, because it used to be, you know, a few plugs of tequila and a little bit of coke, and all this was shut out, and none of this stuff mattered. I didn't have to feel, and it didn't feel good. I didn't care. And if I started to feel it, I'd get loaded. You know, so I didn't have to deal with that. But with the reissuance of feelings, that's a pretty good indicator. And you know, maybe a lot of people have had them. Maybe, you know, you haven't had the ability to be able to shut it down. But it's tough, because my mind still tells me, you know, that's at dances I find myself doing that. You know, I go, there's a clean nightclub I go to in Bellingham a lot. And I'll go there to dance, and I'll start doing this, you know, who should I put my energy into? And whenever I do that, I have a terrible time. And when I just go there to be part of the thing, it's groovy. And that's my mind, you know, telling me, well, you know, the object to be at a dance is to take somebody home. And it's hard to break out of that, because that's the pattern I got, you know. There was a lot of years that's what was going on, you know. You didn't go to have a good time, you didn't go to meet nobody, you went to drag somebody home for some instant gratification. Maybe it wasn't your life, that was mine. And, it was really weird when I was thinking of that. That's a big, big topic, you know, when people weren't talking with me. Wow, well, you know, I had so much stuff around my head, I know where to start.
You had your hand up over here.
Yeah, if you don't want to say anything, yeah. I guess I've been brought up to see sexuality or sexual intercourse is a blessing, a holy thing. a thing, something that happens, not just between two people, but God is there too. And also that it's a powder keg, that there's no turning back once you... This is just my experience. And once you've had that experience, it opens up a whole other realm of needs and necessities for your life that are really powerful and gripping. Not that you don't have them before you have sex, but they're there in a more powerful way, and you need this type of nurturing, and it can be almost possess you. I don't know. That's just a background I'm coming from. When I was younger, I wanted to be one of those. Well, it was just never something I considered. I was going to be a good girl, and I did it because of the rules. But then later on, it became something more than that. It's a spiritual thing. It's a part of me that I don't think I want to give up until I know that there's a person that's going to be my soulmate, or someone that can share everything that I am. So I don't know how many other people are here, but I'm a virgin, and I don't know if I'm proud of that, and I don't know if I'm ashamed of that. I don't know. I'm still trying to come to grips with that, but I do know I've been through many relationships, and I'm really glad that I didn't give everything that I had, because they didn't work out on other realms, and it took a long time for us to realize that it wasn't going to work out. It took some years with some of my relationships, and so I don't know. I just think that that's it.
Others, we haven't heard from the balcony yet. First, I know why you're all here.
I guess one of the things that I think is difficult about where we have tended to get a lot of our morality, at least from the church, is from a very different time, from a time frame when we were looking at not only marriage relationships as being the only place where you can have sexual intimacy, but that those marriage relationships most often took place before the age of 22. That most people were, for instance, myself at age 25, in my mother's era, and if being not married at age 25 would be kind of a big deal. I'm on my way to being an old maid here. And to try and fit the different kinds of things that are happening in our culture, people choosing to get married much later, people choosing not to get married, to suddenly try and fit the old history of sexuality can only take place within the context of marriage, doesn't work. And yet we're still trying to overlay that story on top of our present day. And to say that sexuality, and I definitely agree with Mark that there's so much more than the act itself, and sexuality itself is such a huge thing. I had a sexuality professor who used to say, sex is three letters and sexuality is nine, and that's about the gist of it. Sexuality is at least three times as important as sex ever dreamed of being. And I would definitely agree with that. But to deny people who choose not to be in a marriage relationship for whatever reason, for a reason that they don't see that for themselves, for a reason that they might see it for themselves much later in life. When I think of that for myself, sexuality and spirituality are so intertwined. And to cut that off, for me, feels like I am allowing myself to be less whole than who I am. I guess the other thing that I find somewhat encouraging, I think we have a long, long way to go, but from a very tragic and sad and horrible epidemic with AIDS in this country, I think that we have been forced, and are continuing to be forced, to be much more creative sexually, to look at sexuality in a much different way, to look at sexual intimacy and sharing with each other and with ourselves in realms far beyond sexual intercourse. And I say you're here to that, and I think that that's really important. And those sorts of issues, although I would agree too, I don't think that we can look to the church for our rules, and I'm not interested in the rule structure, but I think that I have found it very difficult, and it's been one of the issues that I've had a very difficult time with the church, and I've had a hard time being a part of the church for the last few years, is that there seems to be such a denial of sexuality, which is such a huge part of who we are, and such a huge part of our self-definition. And to cut that off from people is to encourage people to be broken and less whole. And it's very painful.
Mm-hmm. We've got about 3 minutes left, so are there a couple more people that want to say something briefly? Okay, so Dick.
I wanted to.
Okay, you and then Dick, second.
I wanted to kind of, I don't know, I'm not going to sum up, but I just wanted to share my feelings. Because it means a lot to me. I don't know. I was, when I was kind of searching through the sexuality part, you know, because that was pretty interesting. You know, you get these feelings, but I had a lot of questions, and when I, this was mostly during high school and stuff, and I'd, you know, I talked to my parents about things, but whenever I had a question, I'd always turn to the Bible, you know, and you kind of look in the back and the concordance and stuff, and find scripture, you know, talking about, you know, what you want to hear God's opinion on, you know, on what he, you know, he would say about it. And I read that and talked to, you know, just about what we're talking about here. And that was pretty strong. And I knew that, you know, that I would and I will wait till marriage, you know, and that I feel that sex is such a small part, and that the spirituality is so big. And I think that prayer has an immense help, because the Spirit can make you strong when you pray, and it can prevent you from getting into situations a lot of the time if you ask. Just simply ask, you know? And I see sex as just unifying two people in relationship, as Jesus was with his Father, you know, and it just strengthens it so much. So that's kind of what I had.
Dick, and then Di after that.
So, very touching conversation. One of the things that bothered me about the church's statement was, among the things, in addition to the things that have already been articulated, was that there was no standard about lifestyle. There was no standard about wrecking the environment. There was no standard about consumption. You know, it was clearly the narrowness and targetedness of it that was one of the additional problems.
Have you read the whole document? Don't just go by what I quoted, because there are other sections.
There are.
In the, yeah.
I read one of the drafts, but...
But they're weak. I would agree with you. They are not nearly as explicit as the one on sex that has like A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H.
And just the other quick comment is that this raises a lot of interesting questions about moral authority of the church, moral authority of the scriptures. How do you use the scriptures for moral guidance? Where do you get moral authority? And I'm not going to address any of them except to say that there's a whole range of very important questions here that are being raised in addition to the tie into other dimensions of our moral lives.
Okay. Di?
Along with Howard, I spoke last year, and I remember ending that session saying that Holden and I had found that my sexuality has become very sacred. I still hold that belief, and but this year has brought some new things. I discovered that my sexuality is much more than physical, and that that I think it needs to be known that our sexual feelings abound, and we can hold them in, but the more we hold them in, the bigger that they get. And I can possibly be attracted to anyone in this room. And before, I didn't know that. And before, I would have made rules for myself. The church doesn't have to make any rules for me. But it's energy, and to celebrate that energy, and yet to know, while I may not be able to control the feelings that I have, and the energy and the gifts that brings to my work and to my relationships and to the gifts and to the frustration that I might have, that I can make choices. And that's my will, and that's my choice. I think we need to share that with people. I think for me in my past, it created a lot of guilt. It created a lot of, I made choices because I didn't think I had a choice. That has been a very valuable learning this year. The other thing that for me has been a gift at Holden, and this is an appropriate place to say it, is that the men at Holden, all of them have been a great gift to me. I have learned they aren't better men, but the environment and my life here has taught me a lot about relationship. And not about dating. I feel more like I did in junior high and high school than, and I know that's really valuable to me. And I had wanted to say that, but it sounded so exclusive that I didn't know where I could say that. But it's true. I think Holden provided me with a place where I met a lot of women of all ages who are doing many different things with their lives.